Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the world-famous Goal Achievers radio show, where we interview, learn, become inspired, entertained, and gain incredible and valuable insights from some of the most notable thought leaders and goal achievers in the world. As you know, my name is Phil Taylor, author of Set Yourself on Fire, How to Ignite Your Passions and Live the Life You Love, and of course, your grateful host for this next hour. As many of you know, at Goal Achievers, we have a seven-step process that we utilize towards setting and achieving our goals. And step number four is to identify the specialized knowledge that one needs in order to reach your goal. And in essence, that's exactly what we do here at the Goal Achievers radio show, as we learn and become inspired from some of the most prominent experts in their given field. Now, dear audience members, being perceived as a dynamic, inspiring, and persuasive presenter is no longer a nice skill to have. It is a matter of business, life, and death. And if you're interested in improving your presentation skills and knowledge, you'll have to turn in and turn up the volume right now. Our guest today is an award-winning keynote speaker, executive speech coach, and in-demand sales presentation skills trainer. In 1984, she became the first female president of the National Speakers Association. Meetings and Convention magazine says that she is one of the most electrifying speakers in North America. Kiplinger's Personal Finance magazine claims that our next guest's speaking school is the sixth best investment in your life. Patricia Fripp is a National Speakers Association past president. Fripp is part of the faculty of the coaching community at the World Champions Edge and also marketing community at Allen Weiss, The Odd Couple. In our interview today, you will discover why she is in demand with corporate executives, celebrity, and professional speakers and sales teams. I will be calling her Fripp, as most of her speakers pals do. And of course, with great pleasure, please help me welcome the one and only fabulous Patricia Fripp. Welcome to the show, Patricia.
Well, thank you, Phil. And if I were listening, I'd think, can anyone really be that good?
So we have to
prove that perhaps I am.
Oh, well, those are humble statements coming from a dynamic presenter and leader and influencer. And I was so excited about sharing this next hour with you. Fripp, just to set the foundation for this learning experience, could you give us a snapshot of your career and how you got to this point?
Yes, thank you, Phil. I came from England. I was a hairstylist. I arrived at 20 with no contacts, nowhere to live, $500, knowing everyone in America was rich and the streets were paved with movie stars. And my first job was in the beauty salon at the Mark Hopkins Hotel. And there I met people from all over the country and all over the world, including some movie stars. I did Ann Landers hair and Hayley Mills and Rosalind Russell and Princess Anne of Denmark. And the hotel was owned by Gene Autry. Well, as a kid, I'd seen his movies, and now I was looking through the window at the coffee shop, and there he was on occasion. Then, 3 years later, I worked in what was really the first men's hairstyling salon in San Francisco. And that salon was taken over by Jay Sebring, who was the Hollywood hairstylist. And Paul Newman, Joanne Woodward, Warren Beatty, and Julie Christie came to our opening party. So, you see, I realized as a very young woman that movie stars were everywhere. And working 100% on commission, to me, that was a license to steal, and I outworked and out-earned anyone I'd ever worked alongside. And then, with Jay Sebring, I started demonstrating haircutting, and that got really serious when I was 30. So two things happened. One, I started traveling nationwide, doing hairstyling demonstrations and seminars for hairstylists. I had taken Dale Carnegie and Toastmasters, and talking to my executive clients, they were saying, oh, well, if you're speaking, come speak at my Rotary Club, Kiwanis Club, Lions Club, Optimist Club. And I realized after two talks that people who heard me speak came in my salon. And I realized that this was the least expensive way I can promote my business. And then, being a great seminar junkie myself, I heard about the National Speakers Association, turned up at my first convention in 1977, thinking no one's going to want to talk to me. I only talk to Rotary Clubs and hairstylists. And two things happened. One, I realized this is something I might want to do as my second career, because I started hairstyling at 15. So when my 10-year lease was up, I would be 40, which is young, and I would have had 25 years behind a chair. So I did realize there has to be another career. And at the time, I thought, well, it would be an offshoot to something to do with the beauty industry. But I realized speaking might have a role in that. And second, I got discovered by a big-time promoter, Mike Frank, past president, Cabot Award winner, CPAE. But not only was he a speaker, he promoted these big rallies. And he booked me to speak to 2,000 people on the same program with Dr. Robert Shuler, the minister from Garden Grove. Mm-hmm. So that was at my first NSA convention. So I used speaking to promote my salon and at the same time build my skills. So when I became president of the National Speakers Association in 1984, that's when I sold my business to my staff, and I started as a full-time speaker and led to a consultant and coach. Now, the most interesting point then, halfway in my speaking career between the beginning of full-time and now, and no matter what our listeners do for a living, the real secret of long-term security is listen to your clients, because your clients, Phil, will tell you exactly what they want to pay you to do for them. And I was delivering a keynote speech to Aramark Foods, a big company. This was a division that sold food service to hospitals. And the national sales manager said, Patricia, I liked your speech. However, I loved how you delivered it. Could you teach our salespeople to speak that way? Because it takes us a year to be in a position to have an hour presentation in front of our buyers, and we are losing business. Has nothing to do with our price or our offering. It has to do with the fact that our competitors' speaking skills are better than ours. And if you think it's worth $9 million a year to us, we know we have to do something about it. Now, when I responded to that request, I was not smart enough at the time to realize this ability to teach people how to be powerfully persuasive and personable and better than their competition would be my security no matter what is happening with the economy. Because anyone interested in speaking, anyone who is a speaker, knows that the keynote market is not what it used to be. However, if you are training people to bring in more business, there will always be an opportunity, and it's easier to justify your fee. So that, Phil, is a long answer to a very simple, quick question.
Well, that is a absolutely fascinating answer. And I tell you, just the way you convey your experience and your story, you live the example of what an effective communicator is, because you had me at the edge of my seat from the get-go. and I'm sure all of our listeners, what a fascinating backdrop to a most interesting and successful career. Now, you specialize in empowering people with this incredibly vital skill of public speaking, communication. But what do you say to people who don't think of themselves as public speakers?
And I often pose this in a speech is, in case you think, well, Miss Fripp, I'm not a public speaker, please remember, outside the privacy of your own home, all speaking is public speaking. There is no such thing as private speaking. So I consider public speaking, if you are walking down the hall at your corporate headquarters, your short, quick interaction with people you walk by is public speaking. And one exercise I deliver if I'm doing a program on selling yourself and your ideas to your senior management, a simple exercise is, now imagine you get in the elevator where you work and you meet the most important person that you know in your company that you don't know well. In other words, it could be the CEO, it could be an important person on your board of directors. So you know who they are. They may have met you, but they'd have to, they don't interact with you on a regular basis. So imagine you have to the 14th floor to say something impactful. What would it say? What would you say? Because I believe it is better to be prepared for an opportunity and not have it than have the opportunity and not be prepared. And just simply by working on that very simple exercise, it better prepares you for all these frequent, unplanned interactions that you have every day in your career. So that's public speaking. Then there
absolutely.
Is, you meet the chief financial officer in the employee cafeteria. What do you say that can have an impact 1 year from now when they're debating who do they send to a high-level conference? Then another, for any of our corporate listeners, one of my associates, Dr. David Palmer, PhD, MBA, one of our clients says he has more degrees than a thermometer. Very smart guy. And his hobby, Phil, if you imagine, his hobby is teaching MBA classes. And one of the exercises, and I should say, he loves it because he says you have hardworking people who have high-powered jobs, probably families, and paying a mortgage, yet they invest the time in getting more education. So they are an audience that is anxious. They want to be there, and they work hard. That's why he considers it his hobby, not a job. And one challenge that he gives his audience that I have added to my repertoire is what he calls a lunch a week is all I ask. And this is a matter of, in your industry, now if you're an entrepreneur, consider this in your community. All good ideas are adaptable within your own situation. But he says to them, you need to have a lunch a week with someone who works in a different division or different department of your company. And you call them up a couple of weeks ahead of time, so you've got plenty of room on their calendar, and say, I'd like to have lunch with you. We meet in the employee cafeteria. There is no agenda. I just want to get to know you and better understand what you do in your area and how it might affect me in marketing or finance or wherever you work. And one day I was listening to his class, and a young man walked by and said, Dr. Palmer, I took your class last semester, and I took your advice, a lunch a week. And he said, after 6 weeks, I got invited to participate in a high-level cross-functional team. If I hadn't been having the lunches, nobody would know about me to invite me. Now, you see, everything is public speaking. These simple interactions. So that's what I say to people who say they're not public speakers.
And to speak to that, public speaking, as you said, is an audience of anything from 1 to 10,000 people.
Yes.
And it happens, you know, every day with all of us. And the level of our effectiveness really determines what we're able to accomplish. That's so powerful. And two things you said really resonate is, one, preparation. And as you were sharing the importance of preparation, it reminded me of that quote that success is when preparation meets opportunity, and so important on that subject. And of course, then you went into public speaking. Communication is more about listening than speaking, and what wise insights you offered to that. Going to preparation, could you speak a little about that and what part that plays in effective public speaking or communication in general?
Yes. So when it comes to preparation, if we think of whatever your audience, maybe it is you're running a staff meeting, or you might have a meeting with a senior level person, or you might have a sales presentation, or you might have an actual speech to give. Ideally, your presentation is going to sound conversational. However, the difference between a conversation and a conversational meeting or presentation is that the presentation, even if it is a sales conversation one-on-one, is you give thought to it in advance, and you use edited, more specific conversation. Hmm. We're having a conversation. People are listening in, but we're having a conversation. And for the most part, I'm not exactly sure what you're going to ask. You're not exactly sure how you're going to answer. It's free-forming within a structure.
Uh-huh.
And what happens with the conversation, Phil, is often you don't use specific words. You use long sentences. You might start a sentence and not finish. We get engaged and excited about the conversation. So I actually say, well, Phil, there are three reasons you do that. And you suddenly realize after, well, Phil, I didn't tell you the third reason because you asked me a question.
Yeah.
Now, with a prepared presentation or conversation, you need to know. And what I ask all my clients, if you had one sentence rather than 45 minutes, or what is the one key idea, message, central theme you want to get across in the sales presentation? You need to have a central theme. You need to know what the talking points you must get in. So you need to know exactly how you're going to start. You need to know what is going to be your next preferred logical step, even if you ask the client, as I did with someone this morning, and what would you like our next logical step to be? Now, if their next logical step is not the same as what you want, you say, yes, that's perfect, fine, and how about this? Or would it be okay with you if I... So, for example, in a conversation, if you say, and what would you like our next logical step with? Well, let me discuss this with my team when we get back to you. Perfect. Thank you, Mia. And would it be okay if I follow up with you in 10 days to see what they think? So in other words, you're moving the conversation, you're moving the relationship forward, and you need to know how you're going to close. Your last words linger. So this is the difference between a conversation and a conversationally prepared presentation. Now, if you're going to have a more formal presentation, or even a conversation that could ultimately lead to a $100,000 sale, needs thought. And I find when I work with sales teams, some of the most experienced sales professionals deliver the worst presentation because they think, I'm experienced, I've been doing it for the years, I can wing it. Whereas a brand new person, they're going to research the client, they're going to script their opening lines, they're going to do what we are recommending they do because they don't have the confidence of 18 years experience. Very often the people with 18 years experience don't do the nitpicky that they would have done 18 years ago when they had a sales manager breathing down their neck.
Hmm. Yeah, it reminds me of the analogy of two sports teams, maybe a superior team that has all the talent and all the skills and a winning record versus an underdog that goes into the game. And how many times do we see that underdog upset the favorite simply because of what you said? They're more prepared, they're more alert, and the more seasoned team oftentimes gets lazy or gets unfocused, you know, in terms of their performance. I don't know if that's a fair analogy or not.
Well, it absolutely is, and they have biblical stories of David and Goliath.
Uh-huh.
They have movies that they make about the underdog winning. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Could you speak, and you've touched on it, but how do we connect with prospects if we want to be more persuasive?
Oh, perfect. And if there is one way, you will transform all presentations and conversations, it is to focus on what I would call the IU ratio. For example, most sales teams, most sales professionals, when they go into a meeting, say thank you for your time. Now, if you say thank you for your time, two things happen. One, it is giving the prospect or the person you're talking to the power that they're more important than you are. Two, you sound like every other person. It's almost like you say it not to be polite, but because you haven't thought of a better way to start the conversation. So you never thank people for time. And anyone listening, write this down. You thank people for the opportunity to discuss. So, Phil, thank you for the opportunity to discuss if Patricia Fripp is the right speech coach for you. Thank you for the opportunity to demonstrate that perhaps I am the keynote speaker you're looking for. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss why the Fripp presentation approach could be exactly what you're looking for. Now, you see, what I'm doing, I am reinforcing why we're having this conversation. It is not a social call. And I'm thanking you for the opportunity to sell myself and my expertise. I don't exactly say that, but that's what I'm doing. I'm focusing on the purpose, and it's about you. I don't say, thank you for the opportunity to talk about myself. No, it's thank you for the opportunity to help you decide if the Patricia Fripp training is right for you. And I'm also always going to talk about me more as a third person. It's the Patricia Fripp training. It's not me. You might find better training, but you're not turning me down. Well, let's put it this way. You're not going to find better training. You might be looking for something else. You're not going to find better training in the area of my expertise. So let's look at a presentation. Even the most seasoned presenters say, I'm going to talk about. No. I don't care about you. See, what we have to do is work on the basic principle. The people make decisions for their own rational self-interest. People are more interested in themselves than anybody else.
Sure.
So if you might be thrilled that some celebrity speaker or some expert is speaking to your company or convention. But if they stand up and say, I'm going to talk about it, well, it's okay. But it's much better if you say is, thank you for the opportunity to discuss my favorite subject, sales. And in the next 45 minutes, you will learn three specific ways that you can take your good presentations and make them great. Now, another thing I've heard people say is, what I want to talk about, I don't care what you want to talk about. We hired you to talk about increasing sales. And then the next, how about this? What I'd like to do first, and people have been talking for 20 minutes. You think, look, first is long gone, speaker boy. So we look at you-focused language. It's what you might call speaking as an audience advocate. And my favorite example, Phil, if I may give you, my favorite example is when one of my friends called me from the Fairmont Hotel in San Francisco and said, help. as you know, Patricia, I am a great salesperson one-on-one. I hear this all the time, by the way. But I have the opportunity to present to a team of people. They're a convention committee, and they're considering bringing their convention to San Francisco. And we're hosting them for a fam trip. And I'm really nervous. They said I can have 8 minutes on their agenda. And the amount of times I hear I'm good one-on-one, you know, just imagine you're taking that same conversation and standing up. It's a slightly bigger group.
Sure.
So I would say, well, you know, one, we have to focus on, one, who are you addressing? These are the questions you ask before any presentation. Who are you addressing, convention committee? Two, how long do you have to speak? And he said, well, they give me 8 minutes, but I'd like to do it 7. Okay. All right, well, so you got 7... Let's say you got 8 minutes. What are you selling? You got to be clear. What's the central theme? What are you selling? What idea, what concept, what product? And he said, you know, we're really not selling the Fairmont. We're selling San Francisco. Because if they come to San Francisco, they're definitely coming to Fairmont. However, they are seriously considering San Diego. Well, as you know, Phil, you can't knock your competition, but what you have to do is present what you're offering as more beneficial to them. And then the question that most salespeople forget, if you make the sale, what's it worth to the Fairmont? He said $500,000. I said, let me get this right. You've got 8 minutes to make $500,000. That is $1,068. It is $1,038.67 a second.
A second.
Even when you pause. Now, how had you intended starting? And he said, well, ladies and gentlemen, it's so nice to be hosting you at the Fairmont, and I certainly hope if you're having a good time and the experience is good. And I said, look, it's very polite, but you wasted $20,000 and you haven't said it. Now, understand the setup, Phil. He's been hosting them. They know who he is. He is now on the agenda, and they've said, well, he is our sales manager, Greg, and he stands up. I said, why don't you try this approach? In the next 8 minutes, you will decide the best decision you can make for your members and your association is to bring your convention to San Francisco and the Fairmont Hotel. Now, that's 5 you or yours, 1 Fairmont. That is what I call a very you-focused opening. And when you use you-focused language, you emotionally connect with your audience because they're more interested in them than you.
Mm.
So then your transition line would be, San Diego is a magnificent destination, and you should go there another year. Now, the reason that you should come to San Francisco this year is specific, 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 specific. In other words, you have an emotional opening and you have a logical structure. Because your audience, this convention committee, you have to go back to your executive and the convention staff and the board of directors, and ultimately your membership, and say, this is why we think we should go to San Francisco. It's not only, you know, it helps that the sales manager was nice, but it was really, you know, they've just, in San Francisco, they've just rebuilt the De Young Museum, and they're having very affordable, almost given away special event prices. So that would be a great venue to have a party that no one's been to yet. This time of year, the room rates are better. This time of year, the weather is exceptional. Whatever really the logical reasons are, we would be the captive convention. It would almost be as if the hotel was ours.
Yeah.
Then, at the end, you can answer any questions, and rest assured, all the associates of the Fairmont Hotel will be here to serve you. and imagine years from now, when your convention attendees are sitting around the hotel lobby reminiscing about their favorite, and they remember the best convention was in San Francisco at the Fairmont when you were the planning committee. Now, did he say, bring your business here, and you will go down in your association history as heroes? No, he didn't actually say that. He just painted the picture that they would think that.
Sure.
So you start and close with emotion. You focus language and logic in between. Because you cannot ask people for $500,000, or as some of my clients do, when they're asking for business, they're asking for $20 million. There have to be some logical reasons, but you still have to use you-focused language. Now, that's with the sales presentation. The same principles, Phil, work in a speech. You know, it's you're not the I want to talk about and I'm going to do. That works. But then there's also, you don't talk to everybody in the room. You know, how often do we hear people say, each and every one of you in this room? That's each and every one of you in this room. That's nine words to say you. And when you talk to one person 300 or 1,000 times, everyone in the audience is hearing the speaker is talking to me. You're building a relationship to one. You see, you speak to one, but you connect to them all. So if you are persuading an audience of 1, 5, 50, 500, or 5,000, you focus language in a combination of emotional and logical connection, so it's intellectual and emotional connection, makes a difference.
Absolutely. And you know, as you're speaking of the importance of speaking to the you, and I, there was a study that was done, which was just remarkable. I think it really puts things in perspective that 95% of the time people are thinking of guess who?
Themselves.
Themselves. Isn't that remarkable?
Yeah.
What's in it for me? What's in it for me? That's what the audience is always continually asking themselves. And as you so eloquently articulated, if you can zero in and speak to that need and that desire, then you will be that effective communicator. So powerful. The other thing I just love about listening to you, Patricia, is you paint such vivid imagery. You evoke emotions as you're speaking and telling these stories. And I speak that by just say that just by listening to you on numerous times. How important is painting imagery and storytelling as you're communicating to people?
Certainly it is. It is important because people do not remember everything they hear. They remember the pictures that created in their minds. Which brings up, it's an advanced concept, but it's a simple concept. One of my hang-around buddies is a genius copywriter, David Garfinkel. And he said, Fripp, for your birthday, I'm giving you my favorite writing book, and it's called The Brilliance Breakthrough. Now, nobody needs, you know, I hate to do this to the author, but you don't need to buy the book. You just need to accept the premise of the book. And the premise is that forget nouns, adjectives, adverbs, pronouns. There are only two types of words. Picture words and connecting words. So certainly we tell a story and people see it. They see the characters, the scenes. However, we can do that with shorter sentences. We can put stories and pictures into a sentence. So let's just take one simple sentence, and then we'll understand the idea of a picture word. And that might be, I walked into the boss's office. Now, if you change one word, I staggered into the boss's office, the picture changes.
Mm.
I sauntered into the boss's office. I raced into the boss's office. Now, you notice not only does it change the picture, the way you deliver the word to match what it represents changes.
Mm.
Because you don't say saunter and race the same way. So that gives you the opportunity to not only make a visual sentence, it gives you the chance to add some vocal variety and color within your presentation.
Hmm.
Now then, if you look at the delivery, we have to be more strategic. So for me, there are three ingredients in a presentation. There's the content, what it is you're actually saying. Then there's how do you structure the presentation, how do you structure your magnificent content so it's easy for you to remember and logical and easy for the audience to follow and remember, and then there's the delivery. And when speakers come to me and say, I've already got my presentation, I just want you to coach me on your delivery, I usually say, well, why would you want to perfect a poorly structured, badly scripted presentation? So even when I have had CPAEs come to me, we always have to look, where's the structure and what's the script? You always step backwards. Now, so if your sentence, I staggered or whatever it is, however you intend to enter the boss's office, then once you have your script, once you have what you're going to say, you look at the delivery. And I then recommend, once you've got your script, you have to get it in your body, and your delivery has to be more strategic, because the audience can remember what they see the audience can remember what they hear when they see it. So, for example, if you have the style, and some people are more moving-oriented than others, but if you were walking across the stage, Phil, and you said, I walked into the boss's office, and I said, boss, I deserve a raise, and you keep walking, there is something wrong with that picture, because the audience is imagining you walking in the boss's office and standing in front of his desk, or her desk. Now, if you keep walking, in their mind, this is illogical, because you've walked over the desk, over the boss, and out the window. So you see how, once you have the words, your movement has to match the picture you're creating.
Uh-huh.
Now, this sounds so obvious when we're discussing it, but you've seen enough speakers at NSA to see them roaming all over the stage, and a lot of executives think, if I'm going to be dynamic, I got to keep moving. And most of them, my executive clientele, when I look, let's look at last year's speech, I see, can you see? You're actually distracting from your own message. The words aren't good, but who can pay attention with you roaming all over the stage?
Go ahead.
I'm going to tell you a secret, and then you ask me the question, which I will answer. The secret is I had already received my CPAE Hall of Fame award before I realized how complex it was to give a really good presentation.
Mm.
Now, what's your question?
Well, what's buzzing in my mind as you're speaking is the enormous, enormous, unspeakable value of harnessing this expertise to really becoming an expert yourself in this, because it can make the difference in your life that can amount in the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, if not millions. And that's just buzzing in my mind. But you were talking about body language, purposeful movement versus sporadic movement.
Mm.
How does somebody develop purposeful movement when speaking?
Hold that. Let's step backward and just answer the question. no matter what level you are at, how do you get better? Because I'm sure we have listeners who would consider themselves novices. Others might consider themselves, well, ambitious beginners. Others might be just respectably okay, and others might think, well, I'm experienced, or I'm at least professional, and some might be thinking, well, I'm so good, I could be doing this myself. Phil should be interviewing me about this subject. Now, no matter what your level of development is, the question I posed to every audience, and the first time I posed it, was at the National Speakers Association. Are you practicing to improve or to reinforce bad habits?
Right.
And in reality, we're doing both. Because whatever you're doing, you are reinforcing, you're getting it into your body. So one, how you get better is one, to analyze what you are doing well. And a lot of what presenters do well is natural. The secret is to analyze it and understand what is the technique behind what you are doing superbly well. Because you need to understand that what you're doing, what is the technique that you could, one, repeat under stress, and two, teach somebody else. And the chances are, mere mortals, you can't understand what it is that works. They know most of the time they get good results. They might not know why. The second way is you have to learn what it is you're doing that is distracting from you being as impactful as possible. So it might be, you have wonderful energy and great vocal variety, and it's captivating, but you don't pause enough for people to reflect on the brilliance that they're hearing from you.
Right.
And the third is you learn information that at this point you have not been introduced to. Now, certainly you and I, in our various professional expertises and with our speaker friends, we know the value of going to experts in the industry, in a chosen industry. It's a good speech coach, it's a good coach or mentor. However, you don't necessarily have to have the best speech coach in the entire world help you, but you do need to have help from someone who knows considerably more than you do, and secondly, has your best interest at heart. So, for example, I recommend beginners, and I mean, we have friends in the National Speakers Association who go to advanced Toastmaster type of organizations. And I say, you go to a Toastmaster club, a club is as good as the caliber of the members and the quality of the feedback.
Mm.
Now, once in a while, I do coaching camps with Darren LaCroix. And people can pay to be coached. They are coached by both of us both days. Never more than six people, so you're getting at least an hour in the hot seat. But we also sell seats for people who aren't ready to be coached, but they want to learn from the process. And we've had people that have taken 28 pages of notes just watching us coach other people. But you're not just watching, because our goal is to teach you to look at the presentations through our eyes. You might not have the expertise Darren and I have, but you do have the expertise of your own experience. How do you feel? Some of my CPA friends, the advice that I give them is the same that their spouses give them. And they, I've heard so many of our male friends say, yeah, but my wife isn't a speaker. I said, but she knows how she feels and what the experience is, and she has your best interest at heart. See, everyone is an expert on their opinion. Now, they might not be able to tell you how to improve,
mm-hmm.
but someone with more experience than you do might.
Mm-hmm.
And when I challenge anyone who ever comes to any of my speaking schools, I always say, your first assignment is to find somebody, take your notes, and teach them what you think you learned. Because the way you reinforce what you know is to teach somebody else.
Mm. How many times have we heard that? And
yes.
So true. Powerful. Yeah. Now, you mentioned Toastmasters. That's mm. one venue. But tell us about, you mentioned your schools. Could you speak a little to that? What's involved in your school? How does someone learn more about your schools?
Well, they would learn by going to my website, fripp.com. Now, we have just finished a speaking school. I usually deliver a speaking school and then the odd couple marketing and strategy seminar with Alan Weiss. And some people come just to each one. Some people come to all of them. So probably later this year, I will be delivering a speaking school. Because I'm so busy with my individual clients and my coaching, you know, my group corporate clients, I only present usually a couple a year myself, but they're advertised on the website, fripp.com. And then a couple of times a year, I have these coaching camps with Darren LaCroix. At this point, there are no dates booked. With the odd couple marketing and strategy seminar for speakers, consultants, and coaches. Because if I don't know if you've ever interviewed Alan Weiss, but I mean, he really is the consultant's consultant. And
sure.
Thinks like nobody else thinks. And we are going to have our final odd couple next year. After 17 years, enough's enough. So we're going to do one blowout, and we're also going to be selling virtual seats as well as in-person seats. So we're just working, yes. And in fact, my next speaking school will be delivered not only in-person but also virtually.
Wow! Wow! So this is the farewell tour, huh? Alan Weiss,
the farewell tour
Patricia
of the odd couple. Both of us will be doing our own individual ventures, and that's going to be the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of June next year, probably in San Francisco, maybe Las Vegas, but probably.
Wow!
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's exciting. Something to look forward to. Get your tickets now, you know. That's fantastic. You talked about people will be sitting in on a virtual. They can get a virtual ticket. From what I understand, you have a tremendous setup from a virtual office in order to guide and coach your clients. Could you tell us about that?
Yes. In fact, if anyone wants to go just see it, it's frippvirtual.com. So my name, frippvirtual.com. And what I do, I meet people in my virtual office, in which case they're coming into my office, as it were, but they're in their office, I'm in my office, and with webcams we see each other. I take you to the different rooms, and I have business appointments there. I have coaching. So my executives on the East Coast, they say, you know, when can you come to New Jersey? I say, I can't come to New Jersey. Let's meet in my virtual office. And also what I deliver in my virtual office is I'll deliver a webinar in advance of in-person training and give people the background and the frippy pre-work. So people come more prepared. So when I'm with them in person, then when I'm in them with person, we just have to do a review and we get my clients on their feet faster. So we're using it quite successfully. And as you know, Phil, we always want to have a competitive edge. So I'm finding it just helps nurture the relationship beyond just a phone call. And perhaps you'll be kind enough to promote it when I do it. I will actually do a webinar in advance to promo my next speaking school.
Fabulous. Fabulous.
So I'm not
well,
quite sure what that's going to be, but we're just setting it up. That will be the promo.
So that's fripvirtual.com. Beautiful.
So they
and,
won't
and of course if
see in there, but they can go in and they can see how I do it. And I'm just as with you, I'm very happy to share all my resources for my resources.
Sure.
Of in fact, it's if anyone wants to check out my office, and then the company that puts it on is conferencevillage.com. And if anyone's interested, let me just
Beautiful. Could you give us an example, Patricia, of the range of clientele or customers that you work with? What kind of people come to you for help?
Well, let's just first of all look at for a keynote speech.
Okay.
For a keynote speech, all companies, not just one industry, all companies. And probably one, for example, the American Payroll Association, I first worked with them, I believe it was 1987. They had a conference in San Francisco, and I used to send mailings to people who were bringing their conventions to San Francisco, the list I got from belonging to the Convention and Business Bureau. And in that case, Dan sent the postcard back. Can you believe people used to send postcards back requesting a video? Well, in those days, he'd never seen a speaker demo video before. I, being an innovator, was probably the first or one of the first. And he hired me. Well, then he hired me again in 1996. And since 1996, I worked with the American Payroll Association every single year. So that is a big client. And so that, but all types of customers as keynotes. When it comes to sales training, it might be a small consulting firm. It might be one good client recently was CPAs who have to give client presentations to get business, client presentations when they have the business, and then they also give presentations in the community for visibility, so marketing. So that might be something I do, a lot of technology people in financial services, who literally, if they're managing your pension plan, you're going to be spending $20 million in the next 5 years. So that type, big ticket items. Others, they might be asking for $40,000 or $50,000 when they ask for the business. When it comes to one-on-one coaching, certainly other speakers and consultants and coaches and some celebrity speakers, a couple of my clients charge $25,000 a speech before they come to me.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine what they can charge after they've worked with me? In fact, I have one client who was more of a seminar leader and had written a pretty good book. He was charging $5,000 when he first came to me. Now he's charging $20,000.
Yeah, that's great.
That was a big part of it. And then a lot of business executives or once in a while, and I love doing this, is what companies do.
Uh-huh.
Rather than hire a celebrity speaker, they take the same amount of money and they hire me to work with all their executives and all their engineers and anyone who's going to present at their own meeting. And that's fun. Big assignment where you help them with their message, you rehearse them, you go on site. And so it's really everything.
That's empowering. That's interesting.
Yeah.
What a great angle to. Huh.
So it's really like most of our business, it is what makes it so interesting.
Yeah.
Is that
absolutely
everyone is different. This afternoon I have people from a beer company who are giving a presentation to the salespeople. Well, they sell 40 other beers as well as theirs. So it's how and why should you sell our beer?
Uh-huh. And
tomorrow I'm working with an executive who was referred by somebody else, and this is a pre-meeting, getting ready, and we'll meet in my virtual office, a pre-meeting before an in-person coaching session at the after the National Speakers Association. Then I'm working after NSA with one of our international speaker members who in Asia is a big star, and I'm going to work with him for a couple of days to take it. So how could you be a big star more in America, where we have more role models? See, a lot of these other countries, the speaking world is increasing, but they don't have the role models. The caliber isn't that of some of our speaker friends you interview.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Patricia, you haven't disappointed us. You've had us at the edge of our seat from beginning to end, and so many questions, so little time.
And, well, that doesn't mean we can't have another conversation at another time.
Oh, well, listen, you are welcome to come on to the Goal Achiever Show anytime, and I realize how busy and in demand you are.
I know. Well, what I would like to offer your listeners, you know, certainly
sure.
I have services and products to sell, but I have so much free information on FRIP.com, FRIPP.com, really right on the homepage. There are video links you can watch. There are two special reports, 10 Traps, How to Go from Dull to Dynamic, and the 12 Mistakes Salespeople Make in Their Presentations, free to download to get. By the way, those two free special reports are the best marketing for my services.
Well, upon value.
Yeah, and then we have literally hundreds and hundreds of free articles. So if you look at the left, two articles, there are hundreds of free articles. If you look down at the bottom, two podcasts, there's probably a couple dozen free podcasts of other interviews and different recordings that people can listen to. And we always advertise upcoming events. We have newsletters. I'm a regular blogger. So lots of information for people to learn before they're ready to buy, or as well as buy.
Yeah, and it's a fun experience coming to your website, because you appear live, and it's as if you're speaking one-on-one to us, and there's always flamboyance and color and tremendous value. And I can say, Patricia, and this is from my perspective, I do not know any better person to consult with or to look to acquire the kind of expertise when it comes to public speaking and presentation than Patricia Fripp. And that it comes straight from the heart. So thank you so much for coming on our show. We have just a few seconds left. Do you have any final thoughts, any power thought to leave our audience as we say farewell?
Well, remember what FRIP stands for. Frequently reinforce ideas that are productive and profitable.
Powerful. Powerful. So do remember that when the name Fripp comes to your mind. Fripp, it's been just an absolute honor, a delight. Thank you many, many times over from the bottom of our hearts. And we look forward to following your progress and having you back on our show as soon as we're able to.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed. Always a pleasure.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks,
bye.
Patricia. Bye.